Hello, lovelies. Welcome to Almost Married, the podcast for all the brides and grooms to learn all the tips and tricks to plan the wedding of your dreams. I'm your host, Allie Armstrong, and I'm so excited you joined us and to be a small part of your big day. Welcome back to the Almost Married podcast. I'm Allie Armstrong and I'm your host. And today we're actually going to turn the tables around and I'm going to be the one answering all of your questions. So I've invited my husband, Jordan.
Hello, everyone.
to join me to interview me. And I had to ask him to take a break from making a Power Ranger cake for our 8-year-old, soon to be 9-year-old. So he's thrilled to be here.
I'd rather be making cakes.
No. This had to be done. It's been requested that I do a wedding planning episode and I answer everyone's questions. So I asked everyone to send me their burning questions over Instagram and I've compiled a list. So Jordan here, take it away.
Okay, here we go. Now I have a bunch of questions that I thought of myself as well, but we'll go with the ones right now that were submitted. So yay, I'm engaged.
Are you?
Yes. Yeah. And what I was wondering is, what is the first thing that I need to consider doing in the first stages of my planning my wedding?
The first thing you need to do once you're engaged is set a date. And in order to set a date, you need to choose a venue. And I should actually back up, because before you can choose a venue, you really need to have a great idea of how many guests you want to have or you think you're going to have at your wedding. And I always recommend couples actually sit down and start to create that guest list, because, you know, the top of your head, you might think, oh, I'm probably going to have around 150. But as soon as they start compiling the guest list, you know, your parents or the parents start inviting their own people, or you forget about Uncle Bob, that list can potentially grow. So you want to have a good idea of your guest list before you start, you know, looking at venues, and then you need to solidify that date so you can work on other vendors.
Okay, so I know that a lot of people have an issue when they're inviting guests. Like, where do you draw the line?
Yeah, so this is a commonly asked question. And honestly, there's no right or wrong answer, and we're lucky that we live in this day and age where it really truly is about the couple. So the couple really needs to decide if they want to have an intimate wedding, if they want to have a big fat Italian wedding. Obviously, I do recommend sitting down with your close family and having that conversation just to make sure there's no drama or politics there. But ultimately, it is about the couple. And I did an episode on etiquette with Sunita Patta. So if you do, you know, want to learn a little bit further and deeper about kind of where to draw that line and guest list etiquette and seating, you know, etiquette, take a listen. I talk about it all on the etiquette episode.
Okay. Well, listen to that, everyone. If you haven't listened to it already. Now, that being said, what are the most important items to consider when planning a wedding? I mean, we talk about the guest list, the venue. You know, what are the things you have to think about?
Well, the most important items to consider would be, I said it, you know, date and venue. That's really going to set the tone for your event. And also, you know, before you set the date, you got to think about where the location. Do you want to have a West Coast wedding? Do you want to have a destination wedding? You know, do you want to have a winter wedding? Do you really foresee getting married and having your couple portraits under a cherry blossom tree? And then you're going to want to do the spring. So really, that is first and foremost the first thing that you want to think about. And then you really need to think about the larger vendors that might book up quickly, such as a wedding planner, a photographer. Those are the two vendors that you really want to secure following your venue.
Especially the wedding planner, right?
I'm a little biased, but yes, I do think it's very important to have a wedding planner. If you cannot, you know, fit a full planner into your budget, then at least a month of wedding coordinator. And the biggest gift you can give to yourself is that the gift of a wedding planner. I mean, I'm a wedding planner and I had a wedding planner at our wedding.
You are definitely a gift, my dear.
Thanks.
we don't have the budget to hire a wedding planner, are there any, you know, you go online and there's just a plethora of information. Mm-hmm. I don't know where to start. Now, are there any courses or classes we can take for that?
I love that you added this question here, and I did not prompt this at all. You know, I think there are lots of courses available online. I am currently building a workshop geared towards couples, specifically, you know, mainly brides, really teaching the wedding planning process to them from A to Z so they feel more secure and prepared moving forward with their planning process. But if you don't take a course and you don't have the luxury of having a wedding planner, at least, you know, make sure that your venue has a venue coordinator. There is a big difference between the venue coordinator and a wedding planner. The venue coordinator is there to ensure that, you know, the food service and, you know, the kind of the day-to-day flow in regards to the venue is being taken care of, but they're not there to look out for you personally. They're not going to be the ones, you know, holding your dress or making sure that, you know, the speeches are timely or, you know, I mean, wedding planners do so much throughout the day. So I think some people are a little bit confused. They think they don't need a wedding planner because their venue has a coordinator, but they're very different roles and both, in my opinion, play a very important role.
So the venue coordinator is not going to straighten my boutonniere?
A good one might, absolutely, but that's not really what they're there for. They're there to, you know, make sure that everything that the venue has promised, you know, is being executed according to the contract, you know, and to the timeline. But it's not, you know, that very personal service.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Now, you know, I mentioned before that, you know, if I don't have the budget for wedding planner, but, you know, what I really don't know what a wedding planner actually costs. So What can I expect as far as costs go when I'm bringing a planner on?
Yeah. And this does vary depending on what city and what country you live in. And, you know, in the States, I would say on average, a wedding planner may cost around 10% of your overall budget. But in Canada, we don't create contracts based on budget. Generally, you'll find planners that just put together a planning proposal, and you're either going to be paying for that month of or day of service. And I really want to talk about day of service later on, so note that, because there's a really big difference between day of and month of. And personally, I don't even know how someone can just jump in and do day of. I think month of is so important, but more on that later. So really a wedding planner will, you know, meet with clients, get an idea of the scope of work, of the vision, and really, you know, put a proposal together based on what they think the scope of work is and the amount of hours it's going to take to really execute that vision. And, you know, there'll be a flat fee according to the scope of work. So it varies. But I will say a really good wedding planner, you're not going to be able to hire a really good wedding planner for $2,000. You know, for the full planning, the full shebang. You might be able to find that for month of, but if you really want that person that's going to be with you from the moment you get engaged and you know, till they walk you down the aisle and till they send you home at the end of the night, after your wedding is over, you know, you're going to have to invest in that. On average, I spend 200 to 300 hours on every wedding that I plan. So if you know, this is a question to wedding planners, what's your time worth? And that's really a personal question, and that's something that they need to decide and price accordingly.
Okay.
I hope that helps. I know that was kind of vague, but
it was very vague.
There's such a variation in cost.
Okay.
I would just caution, just like anything, you're not going to get a good photographer for $1,000. Absolutely. There's a reason usually why somebody costs a little bit more.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we talked about when you should hire a wedding planner. I mean, we want to secure the venue, and then you want to decide on who you're going to bring on as a planner. So probably a year-ish in advance, or?
Sometimes that works in reverse, too. I get a lot of clients that come to me, and they just got engaged, and I will work with them to find the perfect venue. So it happens both ways. Either couples come to me, they have their venue, they have their date, or they just got engaged, and I will work with them to find the perfect venue. But yes, on average, about a year before their wedding date is when I'll start working with them. Sometimes I'll have clients that are getting married 18 months out. And then I have clients that are getting married 6 months out. And I don't need a full year to plan a wedding. Really, it's just dependent on the date. If the date is solidified and you have your venue, then, you know, we can whip a wedding together, a really fabulous wedding together in a few short months.
Well, little birdie told me that you planned a secret wedding within a few months, so...
I did, and maybe I should share this fun story.
I think so.
So we just got back from Palm Springs, and I planned Jordan, my husband here, his sister's surprise wedding in Palm Springs. So her name is Bree, and she and her fiance Andrew called me one day and said, "Hey, we have this crazy idea. We're going to Palm Springs in 3 weeks." His family was already set to join on a little family vacation, and they said, "Do you think we can plan a wedding in 3 weeks? And do you think you can get, you know, the Armstrong family to Palm Springs? And, you know, can we pull this off?" And I'm always up for a challenge. So, of course, I said, absolutely. And it just so happened to be Andrew's birthday. So we concocted the story that everyone was going to Palm Springs to surprise Andrew for his birthday. And Bree sold it to her parents that it was just really important for them to be there for this birthday. And it was a very important year. And everyone said, no problem. And they booked their flights. And it was really, really easy to fool you all. And I'm a terrible liar. And afterward, you even said to me, Jordan, you're like, how did you pull that off? Like, how did you lie to me? And I said,
I just don't ask questions.
Exactly. I didn't have to lie. You literally, I said, we're going to Palm Springs on these dates. It's Andrew's birthday. And you said, cool.
I just follow your commands.
you were like, what do I wear? And I told you, and that was it. So it was really quite easy. But yes, we pulled that together. Mind you, there was only 11 people there. But whether you have 11 people or 111 people or 211 people, you know, a lot of the same elements and components are still involved. We still had to get catering, flowers, rentals, music, officiant, you know, all of those same pieces still existed with an 11-person guest count. But we absolutely pulled that off in 3 weeks. So imagine what I can do in 6 months.
Oh.
You know, 12 months, 18 months. We don't need 18 months, but sometimes it's fun for couples to have the kind of more casual planning process. And, you know, it's not, there's not as much pressure involved when there's a little bit more lead time.
No, yeah. Fair enough. So as far as how far in advance I should begin planning, so 3 weeks plus, is that what you're saying?
I would ideally like to have a little bit more than 3 weeks. That was pressure. I mean, it was fun and exciting. But I would say like, a year is optimal.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So as far as priority wedding vendors that I should book first. So if you said venue and photographer, is there anything else that I should consider? Anyone else that I should think of booking far in advance or?
Yes. Venue, photographer, wedding planner, check, check, check. It does not hurt to book officiants if you have a favorite DJ or a favorite band. You know, every couple is going to have something that's really important to them and something that they just don't really care that much about. So I'll give you an example. Some people are big foodies. And if you are getting married at a venue that allows you to bring in your own caterer, then you might be a little bit more picky on who you have catering your event. So, you know, getting those quotes from the caterers or your favorite caterer would be definitely at the top of the list. Or if you have a favorite band, you know, local event band or DJ that you've heard and you love or someone's recommended to you, then, you know, it doesn't hurt to check off as many vendors as soon as possible just so they're holding the date. The vendors that tend to be a little bit more flexible are florists and decorators because they can generally take on multiple events in one day. So as long as the inventory that you're after in regards to rentals is available, then generally, you know, you can book them closer to the date. I still like to check off all of these things, you know, well in advance. But if you are pulling off a wedding in a few short months, definitely focus on the vendors that, you know, it's a more of a personal service where, you know, they're not just going to send anyone from their team to help you, like the photographer, it's a very specific vendor, you know, like your officiant, like your DJ, you want specific people. So those are the vendors you should book first.
If I want cheeseburgers at midnight, how long before do I have to contact McDonald's?
Oh my gosh, this is the best story ever. I forgot that this happened. We have to tell this story. So cheeseburgers at midnight is a very common ask. You know,
what else do you want at that point?
Well, that's the thing. You know, couples spend so much money and they're so thoughtful about the dinner menu generally. And usually it is this fancy, formal affair. And at midnight, people have been drinking. All they want is, you know, cheeseburgers and fries or pizza and just something that's going to really hit the spot. So, I mean, you can call, if it's McDonald's, for example, you can call a couple weeks in advance and place that order. That's there's no rush there. But I'm going to tell this funny story because a mutual friend got married about 2 years ago. And they invited Jordan as my guest to the wedding. I was also the wedding planner. So myself and my team were there. But this was one of the fun experiences where I got to be a planner and a guest. So I actually had a seat at a table and enjoyed the wedding. It is rare. I'm usually never sitting down. No, I'm always at the wedding. I'm just not usually like a guest sitting at the wedding. Anyways, we ordered cheeseburgers for midnight and around 11 p.m., I asked Jordan to come for a drive with me to pick up the cheeseburgers so I could bring them back. And we got to McDonald's and the door was locked. And mind you, I had called the day before, confirmed, you know, that the cheeseburger order was placed. It was paid for. Everything was aligned. So we get to the McDonald's and the door is locked.
The door wasn't locked.
Oh, the door wasn't locked?
No, the door was open.
Okay, okay.
We went in and they didn't have the
order.
Okay,
sorry. See, I'm forgetting.
No, the door locks at a different point.
Okay, so maybe you should tell the story. No. So we get to McDonald's. We're going to pick up the order. There's one lady working, and she was about to close up, and they did not have the order. And at that point, we are thinking, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do? Now it's like 11:20, 11:30, and there's just no way that whoever is there can fulfill this 200 cheeseburger order. And there's nowhere else in the area that's open. We're kind of in a remote area, so we can't even – there's no backup plan at this point. So what do you decide to do, Jordan?
Well, there was a couple of people working, and we spoke to the manager, and they had no record of it for some reason. I think they had it for like the week after or something. The date was written down wrong. So we convinced them to actually shut the restaurant down, lock it up. That's when it locked.
Oh.
And I convinced her to let me – into the kitchen and make the cheeseburgers as I did when I was 15.
Yes, because that was one of your first jobs.
I told them, I said, you know what? I know how to do this. I worked here before. And
20
back
years
there.
Ago.
they didn't have to know that. And we got back there. I ran the line. I told everyone what to do because everybody was stressed out for whatever reason. And I think we made 200 cheeseburgers in about a half an hour.
Yeah, you...
It was pretty insane.
I just sat there and Snapchat. I was just taking videos.
You didn't help out
the entire
too much.
Time. Well, I didn't want to get in the way. You were doing
paparazzi.
Such a good job. That was actually the most, I don't know, I was just
so in awe of you
that, I mean, I thought I could solve problems or take initiative, but you literally, I would never have thought of, hey, can I get back there and make 200 cheeseburgers? And you didn't even hesitate. You just
piped
up, convinced the manager, literally hopped over the counter and started flipping burgers. And we rolled in at midnight and had the best story to tell the couple. Mm-hmm. And it was,
like,
you
were
like the hero.
I had a light gray suit on, and I don't recommend light gray suits because grease splatter.
You don't recommend light gray suits if
when you're
going to be
making
flipping
cheeseburgers in the background.
Light gray suits are totally fine.
They're good in the summertime. When you're not
that was amazing. Thank you for doing that. That was above and beyond. And
the
you actually,
was
absolutely. All of those, you know, drunken people loved you.
Well, they had no idea. But that was,
no,
they enjoyed them.
The bride was, oh, that was awesome. She still talks about that, by the way.
Okay, moving on. You know, that was good, but I think we went off on a tangent there. Now, one of the big important things I find a lot of people talk about, and really people have really no idea of what kind of budget to set when planning a wedding. I think from my perspective, I didn't realize how much things cost or how much per head or anything. Mm-hmm. So when we're creating a budget, what do we have to consider and where do we begin?
Yes, this is a big one. And the one thing that I will say is if you're Googling average cost of a wedding, you know, there's a lot of articles, especially in the States, that have been published on big reputable blogs. And it says the average wedding costs $30,000. And, you know, in major metropolitan cities, if you have over 100, 150, 200 people, you are not going to be able to plan a wedding at a decent venue or a decent hotel for that price, because hotels and venues that have their own in-house kitchens and catering teams, you know, they charge or generally have a minimum food and beverage spend. So a lot of times they'll waive the rental fee for you to use the ballroom or use the event space in lieu of a minimum spend. But on average, and this is in Canada, so I know every city has their own averages, but in Vancouver and Canada, the average spend is around $150 a person for food and beverage. So that's the first thing that you want to calculate. You want to look at your guest list. You know, that is an average that could be low. If you want to have a 4 or 5 course meal, then you're obviously going to have to increase that budget. But if you're okay with a 3 course meal, perhaps, you know, you're going to host cocktail hour, you're going to host beer and wine all night, but hard alcohol is an additional cost, then I think you're safe in that $150 mm-hmm. a person price range. If you start adding things, oyster bars, and, you know, depends on your selection.
Aphrodisiacs.
or you want to have, you know, filet mignon, then you're going to have to increase that average. But that is a good starting point, and that is going to be the biggest chunk of your budget. You then also want to consider tax and gratuity. So I always recommend putting aside an additional 25% on top of your food and beverage estimate to pay for taxes and gratuities. Now, on the flip side, if you're going to have an intimate wedding in your backyard or in, you know, a family member's, like on a, you know, private property, for example, and you have that luxury to bring in your own alcohol, you get a liquor license, it's $25, you can bring in your own alcohol, then there's going to be a significant cost savings there. So really, this is again,
it's scope. It depends on what.
It's like you always say, I'm going to use your line. What does a car cost, Allie?
I like that one.
I know, but it's true. It's like, look at the scope on, you know, what kind of car, you know, what kind of wedding do you want to have? But really that food and beverage is going to be a large chunk of your budget. And then of course, decor, you know, do you want to have a ton of flowers? Do you want to have a ton of decor? Are you a little bit more minimalistic? All of those things are going to really affect your budget.
And this is why you want to have some guidance from a planner or somebody that can kind of say, hey, this is kind of what you're looking at based on what your ideas are.
Yeah.
Because coming up with the number on your own when you're just kind of making up a wedding, it's difficult.
Well, of course, if you've never planned a wedding before, then
it's, hopefully not too many if you're not a wedding planner.
Right. but then I don't expect people to know. And so it's okay if you're going to your wedding vendors and you're completely off base. The only give, though, is, you know, if you bring a planner or a vendor, your vision, your inspiration images, or just describing what you want to see, then your budget just has to really align with that vision. And often that's the hardest part of my job is couples will show me images or inspiration images, or they describe what they want to see. And then I ask them what their budget is and it doesn't align. So then I have the difficult job of having that hard conversation and kind of just reworking the vision a little bit, or perhaps they come back and they're comfortable increasing their budget. But that's a common conversation because generally people have no idea what everything costs. And I have to say, I mean, I started in the wedding industry in about 2011. We got married in 2012, and that was a really good experience for me. From a planning perspective, though, just
it's an eye-opener for me as far as the costs go.
But understanding what my clients go through, and especially, and here's the thing, you came to the table with one number, and I easily tripled that at the end of the day because you had no idea what
you're
things
priceless,
cost.
So it was worth it.
Sensing some sarcasm here. You need a new glass of wine. He's sitting here drinking wine through this.
The cord's not long enough to go to the fridge.
Anyways, so yes, it really depends on your vision. That's
okay.
The answer there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, talking about budget, and I think this is a big thing. So we want to delve a little more into this. Now, who pays for the rehearsal dinner and the wedding? Like mm-hmm. traditionally, it was the father of the bride that right. took care of the wedding. And now I know things have changed this day and age. You know, things have shifted a little bit. So mm-hmm. Let's start with the wedding itself. Now, who pays for that? Who puts up the money for the wedding normally?
Well, I think you just answered your own question. I think
thank you.
We live in a time where it's not expected for one side of the family or the other to foot the bill. Generally, it is the couple's responsibility to pay for their wedding. And if family members are able to gift them or help them, then that is incredible and, of course, always welcome.
Do you ask? Like, do you back them into a corner and say,
I think,
like,
no, you don't back them into a corner, but definitely, you know, couples will sit down with the parents involved and have that conversation up front to see, you know, if they do plan on helping and what that comfort level is for them so mm-hmm. they can plan their budget accordingly, because obviously they know what they can afford to perhaps spend, but they need to really understand who is in the picture and who's going to be, you know, helping with those financial decisions. And then you get into the the tricky politics. You know, if you know, mom and dad are helping foot the bill, then generally they're going to have a bigger opinion. And if you can kind of nip that in the bud right up front and be clear that you really want that wedding to be a reflection of you as a couple, and of course you value their opinion, but at the end of the day, it's really the couple's decision. You know, I mean, do you want to be respectful if somebody's footing the bill? Of course, but it's not expected anymore for, you know, father of the bride or parents to foot the entire bill.
I always thought that nip that in the bud was nip that in the butt. Did you ever think that, yeah. or is that just me?
I used to think that too.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I kind of like that one better. But anyways.
Wow.
So the rehearsal dinner. Now, yeah.
Again, it's the same thing.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it's... couples should plan to work that into their own budget. But if somebody steps up and offers to host, then that's amazing.
Okay. So as far as overall budget, now, there is a wedding dress, there mm-hmm. is wedding bands, there mm-hmm. is the groom's wedding band, which is 1/32nd of the cost.
Yeah,
basically, a few times. And anyways, so is that all included in the overall budget, or is that a separate thing you have to consider?
Yeah, so that is actually a question I ask my couples all the time. I'll ask them to describe their vision, you know, talk to me about their, you know, what they've been dreaming about, and then give me a number, give me a ballpark number of what their budget is. And then my next question is, have you considered the dress, the wedding rings, the accessories, the shoes, the, you know, is that including a honeymoon? So I can really get a clear understanding of what that budget includes. But those items tend to add up and cost a little bit more than one might budget at the very beginning of the planning process. So I always recommend having a slush fund, because again, a dress can be $500, it can be $10,000.
Thank you for answering that, because it was on the top of my mind is when you are pricing out these items,
mm-hmm.
now a dress.
Yeah. So
like I can go get a dress at H&M for $45. Now, can I use that as a wedding dress? Or
oh
do we have
God.
To go?
I'm so sorry.
I do not get dresses at H&M.
Well, I have nothing against H&M,
no,
but not for your wedding day. So
I mean, me personally.
Realistically, if you're lucky enough to hit a sample sale, which wedding dress stores usually have sample sales like twice
trunk,
a year.
Or
a trunk sale means the designer is coming to town. You usually will get a discount, 10% off the cost of the dress if you go during a trunk sale. And you have access to dresses that might not normally be in the wedding dress shop at that time, because the designer brings them. A sample sale is all of their sample dresses that people have been trying on. But usually they keep them in tip-top condition. and they are hugely discounted, mm-hmm. like 50% plus, you know, for some of them. If you're lucky enough to go during a sample sale and you're okay with that and you find something in perfect condition, then obviously you're going to find a dress at a better deal. The average cost of a wedding dress, again, if you Google this, it's going to say like $1,000. But I would say realistically between $2,000 and $3,000 is a really good range. And then obviously it increases. I mean, people spend a lot of money on dresses. But really know your comfort zone before you go to try on a wedding dress, because there's really going to be nothing worse than trying on something that you can't afford and falling in love with it and not being able to afford it. And you don't want that to haunt you. So really, you know, have a great idea of your budget for each item. So if you budget $3,000 for a wedding dress, then you stay within that. You tell whoever's helping you at, you know, the wedding dress store that this is your budget right up front, and they'll only pull dresses that are within that budget. And same with rings. If you have like an $1,000 budget for your bands, you tell your jeweler that, and don't go trying on the $5,000-$6,000, you know, bands.
But they're so nice.
Well, I know, but that's the thing. People get, you know, distracted by shiny objects. And
every day.
I am guilty of this. I tried on a wedding dress that was way outside my budget. So I'm not even taking
I think you bought that one.
I had some help. So thankfully,
you're welcome.
I was lucky where I called my mom, and she wasn't even with me. Thanks, I was mom. With your sister. And I sent her a photo and I said, I fell in love with this and it's so outside of my comfort zone. And I'm lucky that she stepped up and helped me with that one. But sometimes, you know, that might not have been the case, and I probably would have been left heartbroken. So really be mindful of what you have budgeted for these items and try to stick within that as long as it's realistic.
Okay. No, that's very good. Now, as far as venue options, we touched on that a little bit about booking it a year ahead and everything. Now, what can we expect to pay, dependent on whether it's a hotel, whether it's a private venue, whether mm-hmm. you rent a private estate?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Now, yeah. Now, what are the costs associated with that?
So, a hotel, the good thing about hotels is they're full service. And like I said before, generally they'll have a minimum food and beverage spend. They'll waive any room rental fees. So, you know, you're going to, as long as you're sticking to that minimum food and beverage spend, on average in Vancouver, you're going to be looking at, you know, perhaps a $20,000 to $30,000 minimum spend at any of the larger hotels to have that event in that one night. A private estate or a venue that's not a hotel might have a venue rental fee, and there's no food and beverage minimum spend. So you might pay, say, $5,500 or $10,000 to rent that venue, but then there's no other, you know, minimums required. You're just working with the caterer or their in-house team on the menu that you want to see happen. So again, it just depends.
Okay.
Sorry, I got so distracted there. I just have to tell them. You literally put your microphone down and poured yourself a glass of
wine. Did you shut it off?
I couldn't turn your mic off. So I don't know. Someone might have heard that was like a really big glass of wine. You didn't even pour me one.
Well, you're drinking Coke Zero.
Okay, anyways.
Okay, now, you know, we see that there's some costs happening with weddings. I mean, you're not going to get by with a few bucks in your pocket. So if we want to cut corners, save some costs, where do we spend money, and where can we have the impact we want to make but save some money?
Mm-hmm. I always recommend not scrimping on the photographer. Photographer for me is very important, and your memories fade. Your photos are going to last a lifetime. I know that's cliche, but it's so true.
Unless it's your photos fade.
Unless your photos, well, you get them digitally so you can reprint them.
Right.
Photographer is a really, really important vendor that you don't, you know, want to cut corners on. Ways you can save money. I would say, you know, perhaps you just offer beer and wine or your beer and wine plus a signature cocktail, and you're not having, you know, an open bar, unlimited offerings all night long, I also always recommend saying no shots, no doubles. Not only does that help save on bar costs, but people perhaps won't be as inebriated.
Just order three singles.
Well, and the problem with an open bar is people just by nature get a little bit irresponsible. They'll be chatting, they put their drinks down, they forget where they put their drink, but it's no problem because it's an open bar, so they go get another one. So, you know, by saying no doubles, at least if that happens, it's just a single drink. Some venues offer food and beverage like flat fee packages, which is in
Mexico, maybe.
No, there's
here
it's starting to be more common in Canada. In the States, it's very common, where you know in advance you're paying a flat fee for your bar costs, per person bar costs, which is amazing because, you know, that can be a stressful piece, especially if people start drinking a lot or putting their drinks down and getting new drinks. You know, whoever's footing that bill, that's the last thing that they want to be thinking of night of. And sometimes it can get distracting.
So, speaking of, I was the obviously the alcohol in the U.S. is a lot cheaper, so they can offer those packages. I saw your Moscato at the store today in Bellingham. It was like a Magnum for $8 or something. So
I know.
It's if only we could. Yeah.
I know. I love really good wine, but there is nothing better to me than just a cheap Moscato on a really hot day. So hey, you should be thankful that I like $8 bottles of Moscato. Other ways to save on costs. So, you know, people ask me all the time, you know, what my thoughts are on a DIY wedding. And I definitely love when people do a little bit of DIY and try to personalize their day and personalize their decor. But I caution against doing too much DIY for a couple of reasons. And one is it might not turn out like it looks on Pinterest, and it's also a lot of work, and often, you know, the couple's going to have to pull in their friends and family to help with the DIY, help set up those, did I say that? DIY, help set up, you know, those items, and it's just a lot of work to put on either yourself or family members. So I like to leave a lot of that to the professionals.
I think it's stressful. I mean, there's enough to worry about sorting everything out than having to make all your
you know, a lot of people think, well, I can just go to a wholesaler or go to Costco and get a bunch of flowers and put them together. And if you're doing single bud vases and you're very mindful about, you know, you want that kind of contemporary minimalistic look, then that might work for you. But if I would just caution against doing too much on your own. I mean, you know, doing if you have pretty handwriting or you're a calligrapher, then amazing. Or if you have somebody in your family that is a calligrapher, then heck, get them to write your place cards and menus and
whatnot. You've
all got
calligraphers in the family, right?
Right? Is that
everyone's
is that a common
come
thing?
Come on, yeah.
I feel though, like I just had a couple and their mom had the nicest like cursive handwriting I have ever
seen.
She's
probably a teacher or something.
I'm not sure actually what she – no, she's not a teacher. But she did all of the place cards and it was incredible. So if you have somebody that in your family or in your close circle that has a talent and they don't mind helping, then, you know, pull them in for a specific task. But just be cautious on putting too much on yourself and on friends and family.
Speaking of talents, would you like me to sing?
No.
No? Okay.
No, now I'm just going to have to cut you off
right
there.
You said your family has talents.
That's not one of yours.
Maybe next episode.
To break it to you, but. So I asked on Instagram for people to DM me some of their questions.
Okay.
So we can just, you know, being mindful of time, kind of like rapid fire.
Well, how long are we supposed to be on here for?
No, we're fine. But just, okay, you know, be mindful.
Yeah,
do
absolutely.
Do some rapid fire questions.
Do you want to go to the commonly asked questions?
Sure.
Or, okay.
Let's do that. Fire away.
Now, okay, we've covered the first one. Oh, first look.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, what is a first look?
Yeah.
And should we do one?
Yes, that's a great question. So a first look is when a couple decides to get their couple photographs and see one another before the wedding ceremony. I am in favor of a first look. I do find it so romantic and special. And a lot of people, you know, say, I want that first moment to be at the altar, walking down the aisle. And I get that. But what a first look allows is the gift of time. And having that special romantic reveal before the ceremony, doing those couple portraits before the ceremony. That way, between the ceremony and reception, generally there's not a ton of time, and it can be a stressful time in the day because you're trying to get your couple shots if you're not doing first look, your bridal party shots, your family shots before you're going into your reception. So it just allows for a little bit more flexibility, intimacy, and people are less stressed, I find, when they do the first look. So I'm in favor.
I like the idea of the first look.
Wish we did one.
Well,
we did not.
You know what, but I
see, you're one of those traditional people that.
I know, but when I was at the altar, and was it an altar?
We were in a church, but yes, it's still considered a...
What's it called?
A huppah?
A huppah.
No, we're not Jewish, but...
Not a chutzpah. A huppah. And you appear through the doors for that first time.
Yeah.
And it was... I just lost it. So there's something to be said about that, too.
I do get that. But also, what I do recommend sometimes if people are doing first looks, if a bride has a veil, don't wear the veil for the first look. And then they add it for the ceremony.
So you look brand new.
A new look. But, you know, once you're standing up there in front of all your friends and family, the music plays, you're still going to have that those feelings, even if you did see them an hour before. Every time you see me walk through the door.
Every time you wake up.
I'm personally in favor of first look, but it is a very personal decision.
Okay. Now, as far as wedding timetables, how do I make one? How do we know what to do when on the day?
So wedding timetable, wedding schedule is super important. If you have a wedding planner, they will create this for you. They will work with all of your vendors, your venue to create the timing for the day. So you really want to capture, if you don't have a wedding planner, as a couple, you really want to capture everything from beginning to end, from the moment you start to set up your wedding, the vendors, you know, what time they're scheduled to arrive and set up, what time, you know, first look is, you know, ceremony is, and then you need to time out your speeches. So speeches also need to be timed in advance between courses, or some people like to do them after dinner. That, again, is a personal decision, but someone should be able to pick up your wedding schedule and know exactly the flow of the event from beginning to end in as much detail as possible. And that gets sent out to all vendors, the venue, in advance, so everyone's on the same page for the entire day.
How do you cut Uncle Bob off when he starts rambling on doing a speech?
Yes, that's another good question. So I always advise clients to tell whoever's doing a speech that to keep it to 3 to 5 minutes. And the reason I say 3 to 5 is if you give someone, you know, the parameters of 5 minutes, they're going to take 10, but 3 to 5 gets the point across that you want it to be short and sweet. Sometimes Uncle Bob or Dad is not going to listen. And unfortunately, there's...
Especially if he's paying for part of the wedding.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's not a lot you can do in the moment because you don't want to go and like steal the mic or, you know, all of a sudden have the DJ kind of play them out. So those things do happen, and we're, you know, we are, if there's a planner in the venue, we are experienced and can just shift the schedule as needed if somebody does go over. But definitely give those people those parameters of, you know, 3 to 5 minutes and speeches. So of course you want people to speak at your wedding. Pick the top maybe 3 to 5 people that are most important to you.
The ones that speak the best.
And no more than that. If you have people that have requested to say something, perhaps if they're going to be at the rehearsal dinner, ask them to speak then. You know, break it up because, yes, those people are important to you and it is your day, but guests don't want to sit through an hour of speeches.
No,
so,
true.
Yeah.
I mean, I've experienced in weddings where people will request to speak that night.
Like
they'll
an open mic, yes.
And
a good MC and a good planner won't let that happen.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. But, you know, we got to roll with the punches. And if that person is a close family, you know, friend or whatnot, always ask the couple, like so-and-so is requested to say something. You know, what are your thoughts? Are you okay? And I'll plug them in if it's okay. But definitely, you know, I wouldn't recommend an impromptu speech or opening it up to the floor.
Okay. That makes sense.
We'll get right back to today's interview, but first I wanted to tell you about an exciting new workshop series that I'll be hosting for people just like you, brides and grooms-to-be that are planning their own dream wedding and need a little guidance on the what, why, how, when of wedding planning. Let me be clear, weddings can be daunting, overwhelming, expensive, and stressful, but they can also be so much fun if you can manage to plan a wedding within your budget with all the people you love the most and without any last-minute surprises. And I want to help you take the stress and fear out of the planning and make you feel prepared for what's to come. I've taken my decades of professional wedding planning experience and created a custom one-day crash course that will walk you in detail through all the steps you need to cover. The workshops will be starting this spring in Vancouver, but we will be touring throughout North America as well. So if you're interested and want us to come to your city, let me know. You will find more info on what's included in the workshop and can buy your tickets on my website, AllieArmstrongEvents.com. That's Allie with a Y, AllieArmstrongEvents.com. Okay, now back to today's interview.
Okay, so when you're inviting people to your wedding, now we need to keep it, we have to be conscious of how many we're inviting because of the cost and everything with inviting 100,000 people, but plus ones. Now, if you have this friend that is single and they're dating someone or whatever, now how does that work? Do you invite?
Yeah, so I covered this more in depth in the Etiquette Experts episode, so I would definitely recommend listening to that with Sunita Pata. She's a lot to share on
that.
She's great. I love Sunita. But the short answer is there's no pressure if someone is single for you to offer a plus one, as long as you know that that guest is going to feel comfortable at your event. So if that guest has a lot of friends that are going to be there, or perhaps they're a coworker and you're inviting other coworkers, then just seat them together. And so as long as you know that your guests are going to be comfortable, they're going to have other people to talk to, then there's no pressure to open up a guest one. A plus one. I'm not even the one drinking.
They're already
over
a guest
here.
One, yeah.
You know what I mean.
So if they're let's say they started dating somebody a week ago.
Yeah, again, that's tough. No. You don't know them, so they're, again, you're not obligated to have their new date or their new girlfriend or boyfriend to join. If if that person doesn't know anyone at the wedding, then it's probably in their best interest for them to bring someone so they feel comfortable throughout the event.
Fair enough, yeah.
I think you have to just judge that on a case-by-case basis. You know, if you have really good friends and you're also friends with their significant other or their girlfriend or their boyfriend, then of course they're going to expect an invite. But you have to draw the line somewhere when it comes to single people and coworkers.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's a fairly respectable answer. Now, should I hire a band or a DJ when we're looking for entertainment?
Band or DJ? So, can I say both? if budget allows, they're so different. A band is super energetic. I love a really, really good band, a good event band. They're really going to get people on the dance floor, especially if they're singing hits that you know the words to, guests know the words to. But bands also can't play for 7 hours straight. They're usually going to play 2 or 3 45-minute sets, and they're going to take breaks in between. So in order to keep that dance floor alive, I always recommend having a DJ. The DJ can play before the band, during the band breaks, and then after the band. So if the band, say, wraps at 11 or 12, and your party, depending on your venue, if you're allowed to go to 1 or 2 in the morning, then that DJ is going to carry you through, and they'll be able to play more of a variety as well. So
both, you're saying both.
I know. I mean, they both bring, there's just pros to both of them.
So what I'm hearing here is ideally you want to get both. If you're just going to have one.
Probably a DJ. Yeah. Because
go all night.
The bands, of course, usually bring a playlist that they'll play during their breaks, but it just doesn't have the same energy. A playlist does not have the same energy as a DJ. So if you can only fit one into your budget, then DJ might be the way to go. But if you can squeeze both of them, there's value in having both.
Okay. Because from my experience, a band has brought a lot of entertainment and excitement and everything too. So speaking of ambiance and how it all kind of goes together, now what makes the biggest impact on ambiance aside from a band or live entertainment or any of that kind of thing? Let's talk about like decor and stuff like that. Now
Well, you want to touch on all of the five senses. So I always remind couples to think about how their guests will feel. You know, what are they hearing? What are they seeing? What are they tasting? And that even goes down to temperature, for example. A lot of people forget about temperature. Is it hot? Is it cold? Are there mosquitoes late at night? Do you need heaters late at night or blankets on chairs? Or is it hot? Do you need fans? Is there air conditioning? You just really want to touch on those five senses. But ambiance, I guess it was a little bit off track. Ambiance would be definitely music and definitely visuals. That will make the most impact. And flowers.
You love flowers.
I love flowers. But unless you're going the contemporary route, which I love as well, and that tends to be a little bit more simplistic, then flowers can really make or break a wedding. If you have a lot of flowers, that can really up the ambiance.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
So from my experience, you know, you mentioned temperature, which is very important because you don't want everyone, Auntie Barb to be cold or, you know, Uncle Jeff to be too hot. But what I've noticed is when it's really cold, the best thing is to go in the corner because it's always 90 degrees there.
Oh my gosh, did you really just say that joke?
Should we cut that out?
No, you're such an idiot. Right, that's a good tip. Thanks, Tip.
Okay, just so everyone knows.
Thank you for sharing that. Okay.
Now, when you are inviting guests, you know, you always extend it to probably a lot of people because the people from out of town, you don't expect them to come, whatever. How can you sort of predict how many people are going to RSVP to your wedding who are actually going to come, or, you know, you just send them out just to be respectful, but you kind of hope they don't RSVP necessarily?
Again, I feel like this is a two-part question. The statistic is on average, 80% of your guests will come. So there's some attrition, 20% on average, but never send an invite to somebody that you don't want to come. If you are hoping that they decline the invitation, then there's a reason you should probably not send that invitation. But you should also expect that 100% of those guests are going to attend from a budget standpoint, because
right.
You don't want to get into a situation where you're sending out 200 invites and you're hoping and praying that only 150 of them RSVP, and then suddenly you have 180, 190 people and you can't afford suddenly the wedding. You know, every person, you know, that's an extra meal, it's maybe an extra chair if you're bringing in chairs, it's an extra napkin, it's an extra everything, bigger tables, more tables. So you definitely, from a budget standpoint, want to expect 100% of your guests there. But generally, you're going to definitely see some attrition just due to scheduling.
Okay. Yeah, because I think it's tough when you're inviting, let's say, your extended family that, you know, you don't want to invite some because they talk and the other ones want to be invited. So you almost feel like you should do it just because you should. So
right.
Can you kind of hope they don't come?
Well, you know your guests better than anyone. And, you know, if you've got family that are out of town and, you know, maybe it's a big trek, then you definitely still want to extend the invite to them, even though you may think that they're not going to come, but it needs to be on their terms, not yours.
Yeah, fair enough. You never know what's going to happen. So this is an interesting question. Now, I'm not sure what this means, but you probably know better than I do. Now, how can I incorporate something special at the end of the ceremony? Now, is that for the guests or is that for the couple?
I'm thinking that question was asked from a couple's perspective. So the thing that I usually recommend doing at the end of a ceremony is having, if you have servers, if you have a caterer or an in-house team, have servers waiting. So when the guests are exiting the ceremony, they're picking up a glass of champagne.
Hey, oh, with a strawberry in it.
And you're not getting the party started right away. That I'm not sure really what perspective that question was created from, but I would say just again, doing things that feel special as a couple. I mean, we exchanged white roses. Remember that?
Oh, wow.
And
yes, of course.
We said that anytime there was a conflict or anything that you would show up with white roses, and that would make me feel.
Holy smokes.
Remember we did that?
Thanks for reminding
You've never bought me Wheaties.
Holy smokes. I could have used that many, many times.
But we did something different.
I'd have a
different
bouquet of roses every day.
Oh, funny. No, but I think I like the champagne ideas. Guests are walking out.
Okay. I like it. Now, sending out invitations. So this might play off of the previous question or two questions ago. Now, should we send out the invitation to the people we don't want really close to the wedding so they can't reserve that time? Or
So if you're sending out a save the date, I always recommend a save the date. So save the date invitations are two different things. Once you know when you're getting married, you can send out a save the date electronically. It can be just on a electronic platform like paperless post.
Isn't everything electronic these days?
Not everything. No? Some people still love to send out like a physical invitation. Depends if you really want to set the tone for the event. There's some beautiful stationery. Again, personal preference. But a save the date is going to go out about a year or whenever you know your date. So it could be a year, it could be 8 months, it could be 6 months.
3 weeks.
An invitation is going to get sent out, I recommend 3 to 4 months before the wedding. You're going to Google that again and it's going to say like 6 weeks. But then you're just going to get guests asking you a ton of questions. And 3 to 4 months in advance allows them, you know, that you're providing all the information that they need. The save the date, all it has is the date and the city. You don't need to provide, you know, the venue, timing information. It's literally just the date
just
and the city. Exactly. They're holding that for you 3 to 4 months before they should get that invitation with the rest of the information.
Okay. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're talking to people about the wedding in general, and if you want to reserve a day, how long is the average wedding? Like, how long does it actually last for?
Oh, gosh. That's a tough question because, again, is it a Catholic wedding? Is it a quick wedding? Generally, an average start time for a ceremony is going to be between 1 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Not very many have a morning wedding, and that might just depend on, like, church availability, etc. But a wedding ceremony generally is somewhere between 1 and 4 p.m., and then, of course, dinner usually to follow, and you're wrapping up well after midnight. So that's if that's what that question is.
I think so.
Meaning to entail, that's the answer.
That sounds good. Now, here's the next question. What is the best way to find good wedding vendors? So if I'm looking for people, now do I want to look for reviews on Google or do I?
Google's a tough one.
How do I search for?
A referral, I would say, is number one. So, you know, if you know anyone that's been married in your city, ask around. If you have a venue, ask the venue for, you maybe have a preferred list. If you have even a photographer, if you're in need of a musician or an officiant or a florist, they're most likely going to have their own list of people that they work with and feel comfortable with. You can definitely Google, but I would just, again, be cautious of keyboard warriors, as they call them. And I mean, if there's consistent bad reviews, then clearly you need to stay away from that person or that venue. But I would say that just personal referral, and then check out their work, check out their website, check out their social media. Generally, Instagram in our industry is a great way to showcase and see someone's work because it's a very visual industry.
Just or ask your wedding planner.
Well, of course, if someone is a wedding planner, that's going to be your best source for sure.
Okay, perfect. Now, we talked about wedding dresses, costs, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Now, when should I buy one and what should I consider? Now, you know.
So a wedding dress is depends on the dress, depends on the designer, but 6 months is generally a good amount of time. You don't, if you're going to be particular and you in a wedding dress store perhaps needs to pull something in or order something in, then 6 months is a really good amount of time. But you can find something in a shorter amount of time as well.
Okay. What if I want to lose weight? What if I want to lean up?
Okay.
Or what if I'm pregnant?
Yeah. Well,
I'm picking a wedding dress.
This is now like opening up a whole can of worms. So, of course, and again, I did a podcast episode on fitness, so definitely check that one out. Definitely people want to look their best. So The wedding dress stores are really the best ones to answer this question, and you as a bride or as a groom know your body, so trust the professionals. Whoever you're ordering your clothing from, they'll let you know if you should just order the size you are now, and they can, you know, adjust with alterations, or if you feel comfortable and they feel comfortable ordering down a size, then that's at your personal discretion.
Okay, perfect. Now, speaking of plan B, which we haven't done yet, if we're having it in a hotel, great, that's fantastic. What if we're having a backyard wedding and it's the forecast calls for rain, which we all don't like?
Yes.
You know, Alanis Morissette says,
what does she say?
Rain on your wedding
you
day.
Just wanted to sing this whole
free ride.
Okay, stop. Okay, this is where I'm going to lose people. So always have a plan B, but I like to have plan Bs that look like plan A's. So the optimal situation is if you have to jump to plan B, no one is going to have a clue that that was your plan B, because it's so well thought out and well executed that it doesn't affect the experience or the couple's day. But if you have an outdoor wedding, definitely book a tent. Generally, a company is going to ask for 30 to 50% down on the tent to hold that inventory for you.
Is that refundable?
No. And then a week before the wedding, you have to make that final decision whether you're moving forward with the tent and then you pay the balance, or if you're going to release the tent. But in Vancouver and in other cities that get a lot of rain, I always advise if you have an outdoor wedding, at least secure the tent. Because what happens is 2-3 weeks out, if everyone's looking at the wedding forecast and it's gonna rain, everyone's gonna try to get that tent, and there's only so many of them available in your city. So it's good to have one secured, or perhaps you like the look of a tent anyway, and then really it's not going to affect your plan B. The only thing that you may have to adjust is if your ceremony is outside of the tent, you know, in the lawn, and the reception is under the tent, then you may have to flip the tent. So you may have to
upside down.
No, you may have to just push the furniture aside to do your ceremony under the tent and then reconfigure for your reception, worst case scenario. But the wedding planner, catering team, if you are at a venue, generally they have done plan B and plan C and do it quickly and efficiently, and it won't interrupt, you know, your guest experience.
Okay. Next question, should I provide party favors? What are some unique ideas that you've seen? So takeaways, goodie bags, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
What do you
give to guests? I'm not a fan of the guest favor. I think it's a waste of money personally, unless the couple has something, you know, just really loves something and it's really personal to them. Like say they love olive oil and love to cook, or they're Italian, and there's like really beautiful little bottles of olive oil that you can get, and you can even have a calligrapher write their guest's name on that little olive oil bottle and use it as like a place card. So it's in lieu of a place card. You can get creative with that, but I would just say save your money if you're going to get like a chocolate or a cookie or something and place it at their table, because they usually get left behind and it's just a waste of money. So I would say unless you're going to make it really personal to your decor and to it's personal to the couple, then I don't think
money.
That's where you save money. I don't think it's needed.
Okay, can I pick my own music if I have a DJ, or does a DJ have set playlists? Like can I throw songs like that you know, the quacky dance?
The chicken dance?
Right.
You can definitely curate your own music list, and the DJ will actually send you a template in advance. A good DJ will. So you will actually put the must play songs and the do not play songs. So definitely if you don't want the chicken dance or Macarena or any of those, you know, those kind of cheesier songs, then a good DJ will ask you those questions in advance, and you'll work with them to curate a playlist.
Okay, perfect. Now, one of the big important parts of a ceremony or a wedding is the officiant. Now, how do I choose one? How do I know that we kind of mesh that?
Yeah.
You know, that they work for what we want.
So, an officiant is definitely an important piece of your wedding day, and the ceremony is generally that's the reason everyone's there. It's the most important moment for some. So either you're going to have a priest or a pastor, which then it's kind of decided upon based on the church that you're selecting. And then that's kind of, there's no guesswork there. But if you're getting married offsite, There are officiant companies that specialize in this. That's a good place to start. Again, personal referral, but always do a consultation with an officiant. It's like a wedding planner. It's like a photographer. You really want to make sure that you mesh well with them.
So you meet with them and talk to them.
You meet with them, have the consultation, make sure that you vibe, that you're on the same page as far as religion or, you know, no religion. And you'll know if you connect with them. So definitely that consultation is important when it comes to an officiant. And then they'll work with you to put together a personal ceremony, your vows, and just kind of the flow of the ceremony.
Okay. Yeah. Now, here we come to the last question here. Now, I think this is really important. And something that everyone's wondering is, what are some of the latest wedding trends in decor and fashion? Now, you know, whether you want to do the same as you've seen on Instagram or you want to do something unique now.
Yeah.
What's happening now?
Well, episode one, I know I keep going back to different podcast episodes, but I just, because there's only so much time today, definitely check out episode one with the editor-in-chief of Wedding Bells, because we get into this in length. But the nice thing about today is anything goes. And there are definitely some trends, I would say. The classic wedding is never going to go out of style. White, you're seeing still a lot of white. It's big in wedding, in the wedding industry. It's more timeless. But I mean, living coral is the 2019 color of the year. So we're seeing a lot of brighter, richer colors and tones this year. Even like deeper gem tones, which is fun. Greenery is not going anywhere. We're still seeing a lot of greenery. We're seeing a lot of floral, like over the top hanging installations or archways. Think royal wedding. That flower arch around the church was just insane. So that's really inspired weddings this year. But really, I think just sticking to a theme or a concept is important. Right from the moment a guest receives the invitation, it should really set the tone. And I also do love a minimal contemporary look. And I've said this about five times this episode, but I think we're moving away from the rustic vibe. And by rustic, I mean mason jars and burlap. I would like to see that retired indefinitely and replaced with more of a clean contemporary vibe. And that is also a good way potentially to save on costs if you're just doing minimal floral, minimal but thoughtful decor. Doesn't have to be over the top. But really the nice thing in today's age is it's all about the couple, and just have fun with it and think about what people are going to remember and talk about. And it is about the couple experience, but it's also about the guest experience, and focus on what matters most to you and your guests. But
love it.
Well, Jordan, thank you for
pleasure was all mine
moderating today. And if you want to learn more about the Almost Married podcast, you can go to my website at alliearmstrong.co. And feel free to DM me questions anytime at Events by Ally. That's Ally. And if you have any future podcast episode topics that you'd like me to cover, send me a message.
If you want me back, request it. Hey, yo.
Thank you, Jordan.
You're welcome.
Bye, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me today for another episode of Almost Married. I hope you all feel a little more prepared and excited for planning the wedding of your dreams. If you have any questions you'd love me to cover or ideas for future episodes, I would absolutely love to hear from you. And you can connect with me on Instagram at Events by Ally, that's Ally, or on my website, www.alliearmstrongevents.com, where we have tons of other resources on the website for you to help you create a beautiful, personal, and stress-free wedding day. And if you are so inclined, you can also sign up for my workshop series on my website as well. Last but definitely not least, I would be so appreciative if you left a rating and review of this podcast in your favorite podcast app. It really does help get the word out to other almost married couples who need a little help along the way, and better yet, share this podcast with other brides or grooms-to-be. Thank you again, lovelies, and I hope you join me back here next week where we'll tackle another need-to-know wedding challenge. Bye for now.